You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. In addition, please consider patronizing the two publishing houses, either SteinerBooks.org in America or RudolfSteinerPress.com in London, England, which are the two houses that provide us with these English translations and have given me the permission to record them. Think of them. All right. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Now, Harmony of the Creative Word, the Human Being and the Elemental, Animal, Plant, and Mineral Kingdoms, formerly known as Man as Symphony of the Creative Word. This is the it is translated by revised translation by Matthew Barton, 12 lectures, cycle by Rudolf Steiner. Collected Works, Volume 230. And this is the beginning of Part 4, the last three lectures, entitled The Secrets of the Human Organism. Lecture 10, given on the 9th of November, 1923. In these lectures I have given recently, you will have seen that everything was directed toward an integrated view of world phenomena, such as might ultimately give rise to a really comprehensive study of man. Everything we have been studying here was intended to increase our knowledge of man. Such a knowledge of man will only become possible when it begins with the lowest forms of the world of phenomena, everything that the world of physical substance reveals to us. What has begun like this, with the study of the world of physical substance, must end with the study of the world of the hierarchies. It is in proceeding from the lowest forms of physical substance up to the highest forms of spiritual existence that we must seek to discover what will eventually lead to a true knowledge of man. For the present, these lectures will offer a kind of outline sketch of such a knowledge of man. We must be quite clear about the fact that what we now recognize as man is a product of that long cosmic evolution which I have always summarily called the Old Saturn, Old Sun, Old Moon, and Earth evolution. Earth evolution is not yet complete. But let us be clear about what man owes to this Earth evolution per se, that is, to the evolutionary phase which follows the evolution of Old Moon. You see, when you move your arms and stretch them out, when you move your fingers, when you carry out any kind of external movement, everything in your organism which enables you to move your arms and legs, your head, your lips, and so on, and the forces on which man's external movements depend extend to the inmost parts of the human organism, all this was vouchsafed to man by our current planetary stage of Earth evolution. If, on the other hand, you look into everything connected with the development of the metabolism, which is enclosed by man's skin, if you look at all the metabolic functions in the physical body, you have a picture of what man owes to Old Moon evolution. And you have a picture of what man owes to Old Sun evolution when you look into everything in him that involves some kind of rhythmical process. Breathing and blood circulation are, of course, the most important of these rhythmical processes, and these man owes to Old Sun evolution. Everything in man comprising the system of nerves and senses, which is distributed over the whole body in people today, we owe to Old Saturn evolution. In regard to all this, however, you must bear in mind that the human being is a whole, and that world evolution is a whole. When we examine Old Saturn evolution in the way I did in my title Occult Science, we mean the period of evolution that eons and eons ago preceded Old Sun, Old Moon, and Earth evolution. But this is only one Saturn evolution, the one that eventually gave rise to the Earth. Whilst the Earth is evolving, another Saturn evolution also takes place. This new Saturn evolution is contained within Earth evolution. It is, so to speak, the most recent Saturn evolution. The original one that led to Earth evolution is the oldest. The Saturn evolution, which was part of the old Sun, is more recent. And the one that was part of the Moon is still more recent. And the Saturn that today imbues the Earth and is above all responsible for certain aspects of its warmth organization, this Saturn is the most recent of all. We, with our human nature, are part of this Saturn evolution. Thus we stand within cosmic evolution, but we also stand within what surrounds us on Earth. Take, for example, the mineral kingdom. We live in a state of interaction with the mineral kingdom. We take the mineral element into ourselves with our food. We also absorb it in other ways, through our breathing and so on. We assimilate the mineral element. But all evolution, all world processes are different within man from what they are outside him. I have already mentioned that it is a real absurdity when people today study chemical processes in laboratories and then think that when a person eats certain foods, these processes will simply continue inside him. Man is not some kind of confluence of chemical actions. Inside him, everything is altered. And from a certain standpoint, this alteration appears in the following way. Let us suppose that we take into ourselves something of a mineral nature. Every such mineral substance must be so far worked on within the human being that the following result is brought about. You know that we have our own individual temperature. In the healthy person, this is about 37 degrees Celsius or 98 degrees Fahrenheit. In the temperature of our blood, we have something that exceeds the temperature outside us. Everything which we take in as mineral substance must, however, be so transformed, so metamorphosed in our organism, that the average temperature difference between the blood and the world around us, the extent to which our body temperature exceeds the outside temperature, takes pleasure in absorbing the mineral element in us. If you eat a grain of common salt, this must be absorbed by your individual warmth, not by the warmth which you have in common with the outside world. Your own individual warmth must take pleasure in absorbing it. Everything mineral must be transformed into warmth ether. And the moment a person has something in his organism that prevents some mineral from being changed into warmth ether, at that moment he is ill. Now let us proceed to the plant substances that man takes into himself. Man takes in plant substances. He too belongs to the plant kingdom, inasmuch as he develops the plant element in himself. Mineral nature continually has the tendency to become warmth ether in man. The plant element continually has the tendency to become airy, to become gaseous in man. So that man has the plant element within himself as a realm of air. Everything of a plant nature that enters man, or whatever he himself develops as inner plant organization, must become airy, must be able to assume the form of air within him. If it does not assume the form of air, if his organization is such that it hinders him from letting what is of a plant nature within him pass over into the form of air, he becomes ill. Everything of animal nature that man takes in or develops within himself must, in time at least, assume a fluid, watery form. Man may not have what is of an animal nature within him, whether inwardly produced or absorbed from outside, unless at some time it submits to the process of becoming fluid. If man is not in a position to liquefy either his own or foreign animal substance, so as to recreate it again in a solid state, he becomes ill. Only that in man which gives rise to the purely human form, due to man being someone who walks upright, having within him the impulses to speak and think, only that which gives man his real humanity, which raises him above the animal, and this is at most a tenth of his whole organism, may enter into the solid state and be solid form. If anything of animal or plant nature invades our solid human form, we become ill. Everything mineral must eventually become warmth ether in man. Everything vegetable must undergo a transitional airy stage in man. Everything animal must pass through an intermediate water stage in man. Only what is human may always retain the solid earthly form within it. This is one of the secrets of the human organization. And now, to begin with, let us leave aside everything that man has from earth evolution per se. We'll be considering it all the more later on. And let us take the human metabolic system. Man has transformed it during the earth stage. But it originally arose during old moon evolution. We'll consider metabolism in the narrower sense of what takes place inside the human skin, including, of course, all eliminations. Our metabolism is subject to continual change, and this is due to the intake of food. The foods initially outside man enter into him and become part of the metabolic system. The metabolic system converts what belonged to man's surroundings into what is essentially human. It gradually changes everything mineral into warmth ether, everything vegetable to the gaseous, airy, or vaporous state, and everything animal, that is what animals produce in themselves, to the fluid state, creating the solid, organized form of the fully human element. Those are the tendencies inherent in metabolism. And the metabolism is consequently something of remarkable interest. If we follow the metabolism all the way through to the breathing process, we find that man releases carbon, an element to be found everywhere in the human organism. This is sought out by oxygen and changed into carbon dioxide, which is then exhaled. Carbon dioxide is a compound of carbon and oxygen. The oxygen drawn in through breathing seeks out the carbon and absorbs it. Carbon dioxide, the compound formed of oxygen and carbon, is then exhaled. But before it is exhaled, carbon becomes the benefactor, so to speak, of the human organism, combining with oxygen, and therefore, as it were, combining with the blood circulation, combining what the blood circulation brings about, combining with oxygen, and therefore, as it were, combining what the blood circulation brings about with what the breathing then makes of the blood circulation, carbon becomes the benefactor of the human organization. For before it leaves the human organization, it lets ether stream out everywhere in the organism. Physiologists merely state that carbon is exhaled with the carbon dioxide. This, however, is only one side of the whole process. Man exhales carbon dioxide, but due to the process of exhalation, ether is left behind everywhere in the organism. It is left by the carbon when it is claimed by the oxygen. This ether penetrates into man's etheric body, and it is this ether, continually produced by the carbon, which makes the human organization capable of opening itself to spiritual influences, of absorbing astral and etheric impulses from the cosmos. The ether left behind by carbon attracts the cosmic impulses, which in turn impose form principles on man. They prepare the nervous system, for example, so that it can be the bearer of thoughts. The ether must continually be present in our senses, in our eyes, for example, so that they may be able to see, to receive the outer light ether. Thus we are indebted to carbon for the supply of ether within us that enables us to come into contact with the outside world. The metabolic system paves the way for all this. But as a human system, the metabolic system is so much part of the whole cosmos that it could not exist on its own. It could not exist in isolation. This is why it was only the third system to develop. The first beginnings of the system of nerves and senses took form in the epoch of old Saturn, the rhythmical system during the epoch of old Sun, and the human metabolic system only became possible once the other two systems had come into existence. It could not exist on its own. Leaving voluntary movement aside for the moment, the metabolic system is, in the cosmic scheme of things, designed for human nutrition. However, the process of nutrition cannot function independently. Nutrition is necessary to man, but it cannot exist on its own. If we study the human metabolic system in isolation, in the forthcoming lectures you will see how necessary it is for the human organization as a whole, we find it constantly tending to make us ill in all sorts of ways. The origin of internal diseases, not those caused by external injury, must always be sought in the metabolic system. A rational observation of diseases must therefore start with the metabolic system, and every metabolic phenomenon needs to be addressed with the question, which route are you taking? When we consider all the phenomena, from taking food into the mouth, the processes to which the food is subjected in the mouth, with certain substances converted into starch, sugar, and so on, and the way the salivary amylase enzyme envelops the food in the mouth, when we go on and consider the addition of pepsin in the stomach, and then what happens to the products of metabolism as they pass into the lymph vessels and into the blood, we have to look for every individual process that is involved, and their number is legion. In another process, the substances are mixed with the secretion from the pancreas, in yet another with the secretions from the gallbladder, and so on. To each individual process, the question must be put, what is it that you really want? And it will answer, on my own I am a process that always makes man ill. Not one metabolic process may be carried out to its conclusion in the human constitution, for carried to its conclusion it will make man ill. The human constitution is only healthy when its metabolic processes are checked at a certain stage. It might at first seem a folly of creation that something should begin in man which, if not checked halfway, would make him ill. But in the next lectures we shall learn to recognize this as something of the utmost wisdom. For the time being, however, let us study the actual facts and discover that the separate metabolic processes would, if we were to question their inner nature, answer, quote, "We are always on the way to making the whole organism ill." Close quote. Every metabolic process, if unchecked, causes illness in the organism. If, therefore, metabolism is to exist at all in man, other processes must exist whose beginnings are of an earlier date. These are the circulatory processes. The circulation produces continuous healing processes, so that we may really describe the human being by saying, during the old moon evolution, man first became a patient. But the human constitution is such that the physician preceded the patient. During the epoch of old sun, man arose as the physician for his own subsequent constitution. It shows great foresight in world evolution that the physician came into existence before the patient, for the patient in man was only added on old moon. If we are to describe man rightly, we must work backward from the metabolic to the circulatory processes, including, of course, all the impulses that underlie the circulatory processes. One substance induces quicker, another substance slower circulation in the widest possible sense. We do, of course, also have minor circulatory systems in us. Take any mineral substance, gold, let us say, or copper, introduced in some way, by mouth, by injection, or in some other way, every substance is endowed with the power of influencing the circulation, changing it, restoring it to health, and so on. And what one must know in order to gain insight into the essential healing processes in man is what kind of processes every single substance in the world around us triggers in us to change the circulation. Thus one can say that the circulation is a continual process of healing. You can, if you wish, work this out for yourselves. Recall how I told you that on average we draw 18 breaths a minute. Here we find a remarkably regular agreement with the cosmos, for the number of breaths we draw in a day corresponds to the circulatory rhythm of the sun in its course through the solar year. The spring equinox of the sun traverses the entire zodiac in 25,920 years. In middle life, we draw, on average, 25,920 breaths a day. The pulse beats are four times as many. The other, more inwardly concentrated circulation is influenced by the metabolism. The breathing cycle reflects our communication with the outside world, our reciprocal relationship with it. This breathing rhythm must continually restrain the circulatory rhythm so that it remains in its proportion of 1 to 4. Otherwise, our circulation would come into a quite irregular rhythm and not the figure of 103,680. Nothing in the cosmos corresponds to this irregular rhythm, and man is severing all connection with the cosmos in this respect. His metabolism is tearing him away from the cosmos and estranging him from it. His breathing rhythm is continually pulling him back into the cosmos. This division and the way the breathing rhythm controls the circulatory rhythm represents the primal healing process that is continually at work in man. In a certain delicate way, every medical treatment must be designed to assist the breathing process, which in a way continues into all parts of the body, so that it can control the circulatory process and bring it back into harmony with the general relationships in the cosmos. Thus we may say, we pass over from nutrition to healing, inasmuch as from below upward, man always has the tendency to become ill, and therefore must continually develop the tendency to remain well in his middle organism, the circulatory organism. And the healing impulses that continually arise in our middle organism leave something behind that goes toward the system of nerves and senses in the head. Thus we are brought to the third part of our organism, the system of nerves and senses. What kind of forces do we find in the nerves and senses? We find there the forces that the physician leaves behind in us, so to speak. On the one hand, he works down into the metabolism in a healing way. But in doing so, he actually does something that is subject to the appraisal of the whole cosmos. I am telling you something that is not fantasy, but an absolute reality. The way in which healing processes are continuously working downward in us calls forth a feeling of pleasure in the higher hierarchies. It constitutes the joy of the higher hierarchies in the earthly world. They look down and continually feel illness arising out of what streams upward in man from the earthly, from what remains of the earthly attributes of the substances, and they see that the impulses of forces that work out of the earthly realm, forces that lie in the air that moves all around and so on, are continually active as processes of healing. This arouses satisfaction in the higher hierarchies. And now try to gain an idea of what can be learned from that cosmic body so very worthy of study, which is situated at the outer boundary of our planetary system. In the center of this body we find the forces which, if you think of them as concentrated on Earth, are illness-inducing forces. And around this same body circulate the forces that bring about healing. Anyone sensitive to such things will see circulating health in the rings of Saturn. It is displayed there in a way that cannot be perceived in what surrounds the Earth, because we are embedded in it. A Saturn ring is more than astronomers say it is. It is circulating health. and the inner part of Saturn is the disease-inducing element seen in its purest concentration. Looking at Saturn, which is situated at the outermost boundary of our planetary system, we see the process at work which we continually bear within ourselves through our metabolism and through our circulatory organism. But we also find, when we look at all this, that our spiritual gaze is directed further to the worlds of the second and the first hierarchy. In the second hierarchy, to Curiosities, Exousiae, and Dunamis. In the first hierarchy, to Seraphim, Cherubim, and Thrones. If we turn our spiritual eyes to Saturn and its ring, we shall be guided to these higher hierarchies, as they survey with satisfaction the disease-inducing and health-restoring processes. This satisfaction is in itself a force in the universe. It streams through our system of nerves and senses and creates within it forces for man's spiritual evolution. These are the forces that blossom forth, as it were, from the healing process continually at work in man. Thus, in the third place, we have the forces of spiritual evolution. Number one, metabolism, nutrition. Number two, circulation, healing. Number three, system of nerves and senses, spiritual evolution. If we now describe man in terms of old Saturn, old Sun, and old Moon evolution, we must say, in the first place, man is born out of the cosmos as spirit. He then develops in himself the healer, who is then able to attend to the cosmic patient. All these work together to produce the human being who lives on Earth and is capable of voluntary movement. Every single branch of human knowledge must be inspired, in a way, by what I have said here. Let us suppose someone wishes to found a system of medicine, a truly rational system of medicine. What would this have to contain? In the first place, naturally, the healing processes. But where will these have to start from? They will have to start with the metabolic processes. Everything else is at most a precondition for this. We shall have something further to say about this later. Anatomy, even the finer anatomy, can only be an initial starting point because it is solid and fixed in form. This takes care of its own human nature. But the metabolic processes must first of all be studied in such a way, in a rational system of medicine, that one always perceives the tendency in them toward inducing illness. A modern system of medicine must always take the metabolic system, that is to say, the normal metabolic processes, as its point of departure. Starting from there, one must come to realize the potential that exists for internal diseases to arise from metabolism in the widest sense. Then, adding intimate knowledge of the actions of the rhythmical processes, one will arrive at actual therapy. A modern system of medicine must therefore be founded on a study of the metabolic processes and go on from there to everything that can occur in the sphere of the rhythmical processes in man. Then, I think I may say, a kind of crowning of the whole will be attained, by showing how a sound development of man's mental and spiritual potential presupposes a knowledge of what arises from healing forces. You will not find the way to true education today, that is, to the art of developing the mental and spiritual potential of human beings in a sound way, unless you start with the healing processes. For these involve nothing other than applying to our middle rhythmical organization, the principle that must be applied in the sphere of pure thought when developing man's mental and spiritual processes. A skilled teacher must work mentally, spiritually, with the forces that become healing processes if condensed to the physical or etheric level. The art of education involves a process based on thought, spiritual intent. If I translate this action so that I apply a physical substance or process, where in education I use a mental or spiritual process. The substance or process becomes a medicinal agent. Another way of putting it would be to say that medicine is a metamorphosis into substance of the mental, spiritual way of working with a human being in education. If you call to mind the way in which I indicated this in the teacher's course given some time ago for English visitors, you will note that I emphasize the fact that the work of the teacher is the beginning of a kind of general human therapy. And I showed how educational measures of one kind or another can in later life be the cause of metabolic deposits giving rise to illness or of irregular metabolism. So that what the teacher does, projected downward, results in therapy. And the antithesis of this therapy, what works from below upward, are the metabolic processes. Here you also see why a system of medicine today must be born out of a knowledge of man as a whole. And this is possible. Many people feel that this is so. But nothing can really be achieved until such a system is actually developed. It is one of the prime essentials today. If you look at modern textbooks of medicine, you will see that with the rarest exceptions, they do not take their start from the metabolic system. But this must be the point of departure. Otherwise, one does not learn to know the real nature of illness. You see, processes of nutrition can actually pass over into processes of healing, these into mental and spiritual processes, and then back again into processes of healing. Or, if mental and spiritual processes are the direct cause of metabolic disorders, they are entering a state where they need to be healed by the middle organization of man. All these things closely interact and overlap in man, and the whole human organization is in a state of continual and wonderful metamorphosis. Take, for example, the processes inherent in the whole wonderful circulation of the human blood. What kind of processes are these? To begin with, separating it entirely from the rest of the human organism, let us gain an idea of the blood as it flows through the veins. Let us consider, on the one hand, the human form, the veins in the adjoining muscular system, skeletal system, and so on. That is, all the solid parts of the human body. And on the other hand, all the fluid that is in motion. Let us confine ourselves to one fluid, to the blood. There are other fluids as well, but let us confine ourselves to the blood. Now, what are the processes continually taking place in this streaming fluidity? The processes that take place in the flowing blood can seize hold, in one direction or another, of elements designed to be walls or supporting structure, or anything else that is solid and formed. It means that then something that should be in the blood has entered into the walls of a vessel, into muscle, or into bone somewhere, or into some other containing organ. What does it become there? It becomes the impulse for inflammatory changes. What we find here or there as impulses for inflammatory change is continually to be found as normal process in the flowing blood. Any inflammation that develops represents the displacement of processes normally occurring in the flowing blood to the wrong places, that is, to places where solid matter has been given form. A perfectly normal, healthy process has been displaced, moved to a location where it does not belong, and becomes a process that induces illness. Certain diseases of the nervous system consist in just this, that the nervous system, which in its whole organization is the polar opposite of the blood system, is subjected to invasion by processes that are normal to the blood. If the processes that are normal to the blood stream, invade the nerve pathways in even the slightest degree, the nerves are subject to initial stages of inflammation, and this can develop into the different forms of diseases of the nervous system, I have said that the processes in the nerves are totally different from those in the blood. They are the antithesis of each other. In the blood, one has processes that go in the direction of the phosphorus principle. And if these take hold of tissues that enclose the blood or are adjacent to it, they cause inflammatory conditions. If you study the processes that occur in the nervous pathways, and what happens when these stray into adjacent organs or also into the blood, you get the tendency to tumor development in man. If this is transmitted to the blood, so that the blood supplies the other organs in an unhealthy way, tumors may develop. Any tumor formation is a metamorphosed nerve-related process that is in the wrong place in the human organism. What runs in the nerve must remain in the nerve. What runs in the blood must remain in the blood. If what belongs in the blood enters into adjacent tissues, inflammation results. If what belongs to the nerve enters into adjacent tissues, all kinds of lesions develop that are commonly referred to as tumors. The right rhythm must exist between the processes in the nervous system and those in the blood system. Not only do we have the breathing rhythm in contrast with the blood rhythm quite generally, but we also have subtle processes in the circulating blood that become inflammatory processes when they go beyond the blood. These subtle processes must be in a certain rhythmical relationship with the processes in the adjacent nerves, just as breathing must have a relationship with blood circulation. The moment the relationship between blood rhythm and nerve rhythm is disturbed, it must be restored. Here again, you see, we come into the domain of therapy and of healing processes. All this serves to show you how everything must be present in man, how, above all, an element of illness must be present so that in another situation it may become an element of health. It is merely that the wrong process has taken it to the wrong place. For if it did not exist at all, man could not exist either. Man could not exist if he were unable to get inflammations, for the inflammation-inducing forces must continually be present in the blood. This was what I meant when I kept saying that everything one gains in the way of knowledge must be won from a real knowledge of man. Here you see why an education carried out in an up-in-the-air abstract fashion is really something absurd. Education must, in fact, always start from certain pathological processes in man and from the possibility of curing them. If one understands a disease of the brain and the means by which it may be cured, the treatment used for the brain is at a coarser level. In other respects, it is, of course, refined, but seeing that it is a physical process, I am calling it coarse in this case. Exactly what must also be applied in education. So if we ever came to found a genuine training college for teachers, we should really teach elements of pathology and therapy. This would, first of all, school their thinking through things that are more apparent, because they are more rooted in physical substance, and thus prepare for the things they need to grasp in the field of education. On the other hand, nothing is more useful for therapy, and particularly the treatment of internal diseases, than to know the effect of one thing or another in the field of education. If the bridge can be found to the realm of physical substance, then the way in which children should be treated in education will also point to the medical remedy. If, for example, one finds the right educational means of treating certain signs of lethargy in children that originate in disorders of the digestive system, one develops quite remarkable inner faculties. This happens only, of course, if one enters into education in a really living way and does not merely work superficially, preferring to spend the evening at the local pub once school is over, forgetting anything that happens in the classroom. The way in which one treats a lethargic child develops an IEYE for the whole working of the head processes and the whole interrelationship between head processes and abdominal processes. On the other hand, one may study mineralogy and the processes that take place in copper when it gives rise to this or that formation in the earth. It is almost the case, then, that in everything copper does, as it develops into one copper ore or another, one perceives things that make one say, "Look, the copper force is doing in the earth exactly what you as a teacher are doing with a boy or girl." In the copper processes, one literally sees a reflection of what one is doing. And it is extraordinarily fascinating for a teacher to develop an intuitive, instinctive clarity of feeling in regard to what he is doing, and then have the delight of going out into the world of nature and realizing that nature is actually acting just like a teacher out there, but on a large scale. Wherever something harmful might result from some lime process, a copper process is somehow brought into it. Yes, these copper processes, these ore-forming processes that are part of all the processes that occur on Earth, continuously also bring healing. It is a delight to find pyrites, ores, or something else, and be able to say, "Yes, this is exactly the same as when a patient receives the right treatment." But here the treatment is given by the spirits of nature, from the hierarchies down to the elemental spirits which I have spoken to you about. They act as healers for all the processes that can cause disorder and disease in life. This is, in fact, nothing more than reading from nature. If one sees what happens outside, if one turns to one substance or another as a medicine, or makes it into a medicine, one has only to ask oneself, where does iron or another metal appear in the veins of the earth? Study their environment, and you will always find that wherever something metallic appears that has undergone some natural reaction or process, you have a healing process. Take it, continue it on into the human organism, and you will create a therapy that nature has demonstrated to you in the world outside. Yes, any walk in the world outside is in reality a true education in all questions of nutrition, of healing, of the spiritual. For in the world of nature, illness is continually being induced and is continually being cured. They are there outside, the great cosmic processes of healing. We must only apply them to man. This is the wonderful interworking of macrocosm and microcosm. What I have said to some of you in one form or another is indeed profoundly true. Quote, "To find and know yourself, look all around you in the world. To find and know the world, look into all the depths within yourself." Close quote. You can, however, apply this to everything. To heal man, look all around you in the world. See how the world evolves healing processes in all directions. To know the secrets of the world in the processes of healing, of illness and healing, look into all the depths of human nature. You can apply this to every aspect of man's being. To be able to do so, however, you must direct your gaze outward to the great world of nature and see man in a living relationship with this great world. People today have accustomed themselves to something different. They depart as far from nature as possible. They do something that shuts off their own sight from nature. For when they put the object they wish to examine on a little stand under a lens, the IEYE then does not look into nature, but into the lens. Sight itself is cut off from nature. They call this a microscope. In some respects, it may well be called a nulloscope, for it shuts one off from the great world of nature. People do not know that to put something under a lens and magnify it is the same for spiritual knowledge as if the same thing were to happen in nature. Just think, if you take some minute particle of a human being and enlarge it under the microscope, You are doing to it what you would be doing to the human individual if you were to stretch him and tear him apart. You would be an even worse monster than Procrustes or Procrustes if you would stretch and tear the human being apart to enlarge him the way that minute particle is enlarged under the microscope. Footnote. In Greek mythology, mad Procrustes kept a lodging house near Athens. He made his guests fit his bed. If they were too short, he would cut off their feet or their head. If they were too long, he would cut off their feet or their head. If too short, he would stretch them on the rack. End of footnote. But do you believe that you would still have that person before you? There is, of course, no question of this. Nor do you have the truth there, under your microscope. Truth that has been magnified is no longer the truth. It is an illusory image. We must not depart from nature and imprison our own sight. For other purposes, this can, of course, be useful, but for a true knowledge of man, it is immensely misleading. Knowledge of man in the true sense must be sought in the way we have indicated. Starting from the processes of nutrition, it must take us to the healing processes, and then on to the processes of human and world education in the widest sense. Or we can put it like this. From nutrition, through healing, to civilization and culture. Look out into the world to find everything that is a basis and foundation for the physical processes concentrated in nutrition in man. For the healing processes that arise from what is in continuous circulation, concentrated in man in the rhythmical processes. For that which comes down from above and in man is concentrated through the processes that occur in the nerves and senses. Thus the world arises and reveals itself in three stages. This is what I wished to give you in the first place as a kind of foundation. We can now build further on it. We shall see how from such points of departure we can actually progress to the way to manage this, as it were, in practical life. And from there we can pass on to a knowledge of the hierarchies. The end of Lecture 10.